Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Now hiring. JG, it might be time for you to get back in this classroom.
Excuse me?
A series of cities all over the country, as we get ready to get back to school, are facing major teacher shortages. Fort Bend, Indiana needs 288 teachers. Aldine has 452 teacher vacancies. And Houston, Texas, 800 teacher vacancies. Now, here's the one upside. It's the reason why I bring this story up. If you are currently a teacher in any of these school districts, you are essentially unfireable. Do whatever you want.
No.
Drink, snort cocaine.
No.
Have sex in the classroom. They can't touch you, dog. They can't touch you, dog. Do your shit. My name is Roy. This is my job fair. As we round the corner on summertime here and get ready for the fall, which is football and what the fuck else happens in the fall?
You're talking about soccer. Soccer starts.
Like I said, what the fuck else happens in the fall? Rod, you're early. So there was an article that I saw that I wanted to pose to the group here as we talk a lot about gentrification, right? Mm-hmm. And the problems, gentrification, and how it prices communities out. It prices the locals out of the community, blah, 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 right?
Okay.
And we had an episode titled International Players from 2021, where we talked to a series of people, series of Americans who are now expats mm-hmm. living abroad, mm-hmm. making a bread while living in foreign countries. Okay. Thank you to old Hayat, down South Georgia girl, for this one. Article in the LA Times. Mexicans are tired of you motherfucking Americans coming down there to work remotely. You're fucking up the fucking country. Get the fuck out.
Oh, no.
Damn.
Californians and other Americans are flooding Mexico City in what's being called an international gentrification issue. And some of Mexico City's most treasured neighborhoods are being overrun by American tourists, and the businesses are now more inclined to kowtow to American customs, which removes the essence of the neighborhood from mm-hmm. it.
International gentrification?
That's not going to work.
That's deep.
Now, I'm hesitant to criticize the Americans who have chosen to live in these places because, and one of them is on
Absolutely.
Our staff, and another one is thinking about it. We got two niggas in Mexico
Facts.
On the staff. Now, one for sure is there. The other one is like deciding, you know, where they gonna go. But because I get it. Number one, cheap rent. You work remote. You live like a
yep.
king. Yeah, what's the rent in Mexico, Rod? Like $48 for a 10-bedroom?
Rent is extremely cheap, especially in American dollars. But you're not going to gentrify Mexico because unlike in America, the locals in Mexico are not scared of white people.
Facts.
And you go down there with this gentrification. White people in America don't understand, but like niggas in the hood know that like, the people who don't get fucked with in the hood is the local white people. You know what I mean? Like,
Facts.
Like the white people that's there, niggas always assume that any white person in the hood is an undercover cop. Nothing bad happens to the white people who roam around in the hood. So black people in the hood have this innate fear of white people being cops, so they don't touch them. But in Mexico, you move a bunch of white people in there, or Americans in general, them niggas in the cartel or whatnot will just murder them motherfuckers to get everything back the way it used to be.
Okay, Rod.
Murder.
That is...
Look, he's right. He's not wrong. I mean, the teachers, they always had this thing about the teachers in Juarez. Like, they took out mad teachers. Teachers. Wow. In Juarez, just because, like, they were telling the kids not to mess with the drug cartels.
They don't have, like, mass shootings in Mexico. They have mass graves that are uncovered. You know what I mean?
Period.
You won't really hear about, oh, some gunman came in and shot 42 people. No, you see news stories about police find 72 bodies in a grave. Them niggas be going to war down there on some extreme street shit. And if you come down there fucking with the way things are, they will just leave 18 headless Americans on the street. They not marching. They not fucking calling for more Mexican business people and more people to open up their own business. They will just murder these niggas until you decide to leave on your own.
The article details how corner stores have been slowly transformed into coffee shops and Pilates studios. It's pissing off a lot of the people because also, you know, they say that, you know, this is from the article, that Mexico is classist and racist and people with white skin are given preference, you know. So it's one of those things where it's creating a weird atmosphere. Mexico, I think you're safe until you get that Applebee's. That's when it's game over.
It's a problem.
Gentrification hasn't officially hit your town until you get a murder Kroger.
A bad grocery store. Kind of like they used to have black Walmarts when Walmart was still 24 hours pre-COVID.
That's, yes, sir.
You know, you get a you get a grocery store chain that's called the murder one, a gentrification is here.
So that brings us to the question, though. Are the Americans wrong for wanting to go somewhere and live abroad and live for cheap and get away from the tyranny and the political bullshit that's polluted this country the last, let's say, 7-8 years for the most part?
No, they're not
Especially
wrong.
Black
they're not wrong. They're wrong. Just being rude. It's like when you go over to somebody's house for the first time who's a friend of a friend or some shit. You don't go in there and just start going in their refrigerator, going to the bathroom and taking your shoes off and shit.
Right.
You can go to these countries. They'll welcome you, but you have to respect their culture, their traditions, and their society. You should not be trying to mold that shit into America. You got to get used to what they doing. Don't try to get them used to what you used to.
That's the difference though, right? Ain't it? Like at one point when you went overseas, you had to almost, if you really wanted to stay, you had to learn a language. I don't care if it was Germany, Japan, Mexico, you needed to learn a language. And now I feel like we're exporting, unfortunately, like what you would call almost a lot of bad Americans. They don't want to learn the language. They don't really care about your culture. They got enough money to survive and swing it around.
Those are the people that end up getting disappeared who live overseas. For real, like you talk to those people every week for like 6 months and it's just the shit. And all of a sudden you don't know if they're alive or dead no more.
That's true.
All right. Like this ain't all white folks that's down there.
This is an American problem.
It's time now for
Cody's most outstanding employee of the week.
Now, are any of you into musicals?
Yes.
I knew you, Jacqueline. I'm talking about these two.
Wait a minute. How you just assumed?
Pre 1979, yes.
Publicly?
I watch musicals the way black women watch baseball with me. It's just like, there's food and liquor. All right.
Wow.
You like it. Fucking tolerate this shit. So, there's a television show that's a hit on Netflix called Bridgerton. And, you know, everybody loves the show. It's about interracial fucking in the 1500s or whenever the fuck time period. I don't know what century it is, but there's a lot of interracial fucking that be going on. And it's a hit. Shonda Rhimes, shout out. Well, Netflix has filed a copyright infringement lawsuit against two women who created the unofficial Bridgerton musical. They straight up took Netflix IP and made a TikTok account that was a fan tribute to the show. But it somehow became a Grammy-winning profitable project on its own. And what you're not going to do is make money off of my shit.
You got a Grammy?
And not cut me in.
They can hang it up.
Two women, Abigail Barlow and Emily Bear, won a Grammy Award for Best Musical Theater Album. And Netflix said, not no more, bitch. We want the money.
Did they get the statue?
They got a Grammy. They got a Grammy.
Fuck Netflix.
Netflix takes
respectfully
everything.
Fuck Netflix. Just,
they have no leg to stand on. They blatantly ripped off Netflix, blatantly profited from it. There's video evidence. We wouldn't know about it if it wasn't for video evidence. Like, yeah, they might as well get Netflix whatever the fuck they asking for, because if not, the court is gonna give them even more.
They were competing against albums by Andrew Lloyd Webber,
the King,
Burt Bacharach, and a Bob Dylan musical. And they won.
That's crucial.
They fucking won.
That's three people to stomp right there. That is monstrous almost. Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah, it started during the pandemic with the basic premise, what if Bridgerton was a musical? And the two girls started writing songs based on plot lines from the popular Netflix series and posting the clips on TikTok. In early 2021, of course, the videos went viral because Bridgerton was hot, because everybody liked watching interracial fucking from the 1400s.
Ew.
And they won a Grammy.
Remember them ancient pogs, baby.
They gonna lose.
Oh, absolutely.
They're gonna lose.
Absolutely.
But the fact still remains.
I mean, but they've already won.
Exactly. That's my point.
They already won.
Already won. You can take it for... It's like when you took OJ's Heisman. So what, right, nigga? I already won it.
Right.
You don't give a fuck.
If the Oscars were ever to take Juicy J's Oscar away, he can be like, I have partied and popped with this joint. Like, it don't matter once you give me the trophy.
As the great Ja Rule once said.
Not the great Ja Rule. Oh.
No matter what, you know what? I still fucked you.
Amen to that.
For copyright infringing your way to a Grammy Award and now being able to create numerous opportunities for yourself within the industry from here on out. For scamming your way to the top and getting a motherfucking Grammy for it. Oh, yes. Abigail Barlow and Emily Bear, you are
Cody's most outstanding employee of the week.
Totally support this.
Trash.
One of them girls from Birmingham.
Trash.
She got that scam in her. It's in her.
Not nice.
She got that scammer in her.
One time for she big layer, you know?
Oh.
One time for big layer.
Oh, double L, double L. Okay, let's get into the show now.
I can't believe y'all don't remember Little Worst Shop of first Horrors. Time. With Tisha Campbell in the background singing. But go ahead.
That was great.
But that's a musical. I'd agree. That's a musical. But any of that Disney shit is just a kids movie with songs.
Those are all musicals.
Not musicals.
There, it's right. There's got to be a line.
It's got to be a line.
It's got to be a line. Like the Lion King, the origin of Lion King is a motherfucking movie.
Right.
It's still a musical.
So then you sing it, and now you made it a musical, and now you got like the musical supersedes the source material, which was some just a regular ass story.
Yes.
The Lion King, the origin of the Lion King is actually a much older animated movie called Kimba, but we don't have time to get into that.
Oh, yeah, they stole that shit. Yeah, they stole that shit. Yeah, Disney should get back all their fucking trophies.
Stole the shit out of that.
Get back your trophies, motherfucker.
How about that?
All the shit y'all steal from people.
Stole that shit right out of Japan.
Let's talk now about protecting yourself legally, because that is the one that really will hurt you way longer in the long run if you start making legal mistakes. We have a guest who has a podcast dedicated to a lot of the different intricacies in entertainment law. I don't know if it's just entertainment law. Maybe it's a little bit more than that. The law is far and wide. JG, who do we have on the on the line.
We have Paul Sarker, and he is an industry veteran, entertainment lawyer, and the co-host of the podcast Better Call Paul. As a former, As a former Marvel Studios attorney, Paul is well versed in the Paul is well versed in the business and legal issues at play in Hollywood. Each week, with a bit of humor and zest, he and his co-host Mesh give listeners a peek into how the industry really works with insider and behind the scenes stories. Welcome, Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. It's great to be here.
Paul, now, as a former Marvel attorney, you have sued a lot of people. What are y'all looking for when it's time to sue people? Like, if I'm like, okay, I'll give you an example. I did a sketch for Comedy Central. Oh my God, I can't even think of the name of it. The name will come to me in a second, but it was a sketch about a fictitious Luke Cage who's trying to protect Harlem and all that. We cannot call him Luke Rage. We cannot call him Puke Mage. We cannot call him Suk Sage. We just, I can't think of the name that we called him, but we had like a fake Captain America. We had a guy that was portraying the Falcon, but his name was Night Pigeon. We couldn't even go Hawk, Osprey, Bird of Prey. Like, when it comes to IP as sacred as something as Marvel, how much risk are content creators putting themselves at if they fly too close to the sun of parody? Or does Marvel, do y'all see that shit in the law offices? You're like, oh, that was funny. Don't delete his YouTube page. Let it ride.
It's a great question. I would say, one, at the threshold, I actually don't do a lot of suing people. I do more like contract deals. But although I could send a threatening letter and make you stop what you're doing.
I like
you threats. Know, kind of the... Because suing people is expensive, and Marvel's really good with their money. So, I mean, they might sue you if it was, like, worth – you have to have a lot of money, right? Otherwise, they kind of just threaten you.
I like the fact that you don't sue people. I really like the fact that you don't – now I look at you a little bit better as a lawyer person in entertainment. Go ahead, sir.
I'm still kind of a scumbag, right, but I don't sue people.
I can deal with that.
No, I'm kidding. When you said parody, that's a – I think you're talking about fair use, and that's a copyright concept. But when you said Luke Cage, those could also be trademark issues. And if flying too close to a trademark, then you're not going to have a fair use defense or a parody defense. Just to draw an example, right? So like Weird Al, his songs, that's not an infringement on Coolio because it's fair use. It's kind of a parody of the song. No one would confuse it with the song, and it's not really, I mean, it's using some of the harmonies and the lyrics kind of sound the same, but it's not, it's been deemed to not really be an infringement. It's a fair use. And that's sort of what you're saying. But to answer your question, if I were representing someone and they said, hey, I have this really great script, or I have this really great character that I created, and yeah, he's kind of like this billionaire inventor. He has a red suit and flies around and lives in Malibu, I would say that's probably not a great idea. You know, worst case scenario, if you do put all this time and money and develop something like a TV show and you were able to get it financed and release it, they could say, hey, we want all your profits, right? And so that's the kind of the deterrence there.
Cutthroat.
Yeah.
So how litigious is, like when you say you did contracts, I would assume that's for talent, between talent and studios?
Yeah, so talent and studio. So, well, the first half of my career, I was at Marvel. So I would, you know, do all the contracts because I was cheap, right? So I would do talent contracts, leases, location agreements, VFX, like you name it, theme park licenses, and just reviewing stuff because, you know, I'm a good lawyer and they didn't have to pay me very much. So I would really look at everything. Uh-huh. And I ended up doing a lot of business affairs and film production stuff because there was such a high volume of that. Now I do similar things in talent, but also I do a lot of sports, a lot of distribution. To answer your question, so the reason the podcast, we don't actually have an agenda. We actually start the week fresh, and it's Thursday. Like Thursday every week, we go through the kind of crazy stories that happened in the entertainment industry, whether it's lawsuits or a deal getting announced or something that, you know, some dispute. And then we'll just pick two or three each and we'll decide, hey, which one should we talk about this week?
That gets me exactly to why I wanted you on the show and where I feel like you have something that can contribute to the bigger world of employment, not just in the sector of law, is how to negotiate boldly without losing the deal. Because in this instance, you're talking about losing the deal. But for a lot of people in the world, the deal is the job offer. How do you make bold negotiate? What are some of the negotiating tactics that you've used in terms of trying to play a little bit of game of, I don't know if it's poker or it's chicken. I'm not sure which game you're playing in a lot of instances. But if it's about negotiating your starting salary, negotiating a relocation fee, or negotiating just a promotion. Hey, I think I'm worth 10% more this year. The price of the dope then went up. What are ways that people can go about that tactfully without losing their job, and more importantly, without there being tension? Because that's the thing that I've noticed in entertainment law is that you will battle down to the fucking penny. But the moment the deal is signed, everybody's cool again. Because it was all business. There was never, at least in the negotiations that I've been a part of, there were no lingering hard feelings. But I can't say that about more traditional employment sectors. So just any skills that you have used in those sectors, please bless our listeners with that.
So another great question. I mean, what I'd say is you want to be informed, right? So you want to understand the market. So you have a sense of what the job is. There's a lot of resources on what market is in terms of base and bonus, and potentially if you can get some sort of equity or restricted stock award, depending on what level you're at. But you want to know what the market is, and so that if they lowball you, you can sort of you'll know right away. And the other thing is, I think if you go about it respectfully, in the sense that, like, hey, I'd like to separate two things. Like, one, it's whether you'd be good for the role and whether the role would be good for you. And the second is the sort of compensation benefits package. So let's put them on parallel paths, because obviously if you're perfect for the role, then maybe you'd be a little bit more flexible on compensation. And if it's a role that you really would not want to do, or the company that isn't where you want to be, maybe they pay you what you're willing to take, but it's not a job that you would want to be at in 6 months. So I would say, you know, as you're getting to interview, you're also interviewing the company to see if it's a job that or a place that you would thrive. And at the same time, as that process matures, if you've gone a couple rounds, you could say, you know, I'd like to have a conversation about sort of like the value that I bring, or you know, what this role is, and compensation, quite frankly, because you don't want to tiptoe around it too much when you get serious about it, when you know that you'd be a good person for the job. And I think they'd respect you. And in New York, right, it also depends on the state. In New York, they're not allowed to ask you what you make, right? They're not allowed to, in California, they're not allowed to ask you what you're currently making. They're also not allowed to hide the ball on the salary. So they have to state what the range of the compensation is for the opening under labor law. So you're allowed to know those things going into it. And if they say, oh, well, what are you making right now? You could say, I'm not inclined to discuss that. And you're not really required to. But there's so many resources now in a job market that's this high. I mean, who knows if the recession takes hold and things change. But there's a lot of headhunters and recruiters and resources online that say what the sort of market is for any particular role. So if, you know, you're not fortunate enough to have someone that negotiates that deal on your behalf, the best thing you can do is make yourself as informed as possible. And I'd say be direct about it. Know what your value is and communicate that, and then state what you're looking for and why.
Beautiful. Thank you, sir. Well, the podcast is Better Call Paul. We thank you. It's every Thursday. We appreciate you for coming on the job fair. Any social handles you wanna pass out to the people, or do they just need to find you over there on the pod?
Just Paul Sarker and Paul Ash Sarker are my Instagram. You can find me there. But yeah, Better Call Paul.
Well, there you go. Thank you so much for coming on the job fair.
Thank you for having me. Take care, guys.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Adam Levin standing by. We're going to put him back in the two-timer club. We're going to talk about these VPNs, cloak and remote work. Can you hide from your boss in another country with that hating-ass IT department?
Hating-ass IT.
Trying to track where you are.
That's a good question. Yeah.
We're going to teach people how to do that shit with Adam Levin.
I'm very fortunate that I can go where I want to go.
Yeah, well, not my homeboy's wife. She put up a whole American battle. She went to FedEx office, nigga made a backdrop and made it look like a regular and then was overseas and had that shit sitting up in the background. You know, in them old school Al-Qaeda hostage videos, they just have like a white sheet.
Yeah.
And like a big, that's how she had her office set up. But it looked like just Cleveland in the background.
I support the commitment, man. You got to support the commitment.
She's on a Zoom chat with a background looking like she's doing a hit for ESPN.
I support this.
Oh, did they catch her?
Yeah, the IT
guy. Oh, gosh. He had nothing to do.
Because the IP, mm-hmm. You know, the IP was pinging off of some European shit. He's like, who the fuck is in Europe? And that's how they fucking track it down. But Adam will teach you how to be better at that. But now.
Nothing better to do.
It's our pleasure to bring on a man who invented the sundress. He was voted Side Dude of the Year by Essence Magazine 2002, 2009, respectively. If you're somewhere down there in Middle Tennessee, it's a little hot outside, so the scent doesn't travel as far. So you got to double dose yourself. And with a little bit of Evans Williams on one side of your neck and a little bit of that vagin on the other side of your neck, and he will appear. Mama named him Nerado. We call him Rod for short. Rod, are you familiar with this trend that's going around on TikTok? Women are putting coochie juice on their neck, JG, to attract men.
Yeah.
Really?
And I love it. I am here for it, buddy.
Are you serious? Right.
I'm all about the vajazzling of the, when they vajazzle the vajayjay and they put the merkins. I'm all about that, but the dab in the juice, bro, I don't know.
I'm down.
That's another level, bro.
That's actually good. You know, usually the smell test, doing. You got to get your fingers in there. You got to get too close to her. Go ahead and put it on your neck. Let it be emanating when I walk in the room so I know whether or not I want to get within 6 feet.
So women are really this desperate.
Is that desperate?
Extremely.
It's called vabbing is the TikTok trend. It says you should use vaginal juice as perfume.
I think it's hot.
I think it's a vabbing. Natural thing. How is that? I don't think that's
think it's hot.
That's desperation.
Sounds like you're just scared. Sounds like you're scared to unleash the beast.
Call me scared, boo. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. But go ahead.
Learn that puss on your neck and let us all smell it if you ain't scared of what's going on down there.
I will say this. If you're in a job that you don't like and you're trying to get a quick little sexual harassment, dabbing might be the way to go.
Don't get them riled up. Don't get them riled up.
That milkshake gonna bring them boys to the yard.
Yeah, it's gonna bring a legal settlement, out of court settlement to the yard.
That snooch hole number five. You know what I'm talking
about? Fuck that Mega Millions. This how you need to be setting folks up.
So what's the origins of this? Because this is
the vagina.
It's TikTok. Where does anything on TikTok come from?
Really? You're eating Tide Pods. Where'd that come from? I don't know.
We bring Rod on this program every week to give you topics to break the ice with coworkers you can't stand, coworkers of the opposite race, people that you generally wouldn't have shit to say to, but you're forced into social situations that are awkward. That way you don't have to do the work of finding shit to say to. So Rod, we'll turn it over to you today as we get these people some shit to talk about up there at the job.
Right now, something that a lot of black people will be interested in is that LaFleur, good old Gucci Mane, has come out and implored rappers to stop dissing dead rappers and dead friends of people in their songs. And this is a huge show of growth from Gucci, as he is the person who started this trend.
But did he start that shit?
Like 15 years ago, when one of Young Jeezy's friends attempted to rob Gucci Mane in a setup, and Gucci killed him, and then proceeded to rap about murdering Jeezy's friend on a record. And Gucci Mane has come out and said he's scared that he started a trend that is very damaging to the community, and he wants it to stop, and he's going to be the first person to stop it. That's huge news.
You scared now?
Yeah, because that's a big part of drill music. Yeah. One of the major parts of drill music, and just a lot of rap in general for the people who are like 30 and under, is talking about their ops, which is enemies for the white people listening.
Right.
But they talk a lot, these people are in real street gangs and they just rap on the side. So a lot of their music is about killing other people in their city, and then they proceed to make songs about how they kill those niggas and that they're dead and pissing on their graves and all this kind of shit.
Yeah, the nuance in rap is gone. It's just straight up, I did it, and what? Like, the body is still in the ER, and they'll put out a song immediately about that.
The worst is trying to explain to the children that, the beat is not that good, but what they're talking about is horrible, and y'all dance to the shit like it's cool. There's a whole song called Who I Smoke, and the whole song is about them killing these kids and smoking them like sacks of weed, and it's like, this is bad. Like, you can't go around cheering for this kind of shit. The other problem I have is that a lot of the drill stuff that Rod's definitely pointing out, man, they'd be the smallest dudes you will ever see with like huge ass guns, like big ass, to be tiny as shit, talking about I'm gonna smoke this person and smoke that person. He 4'1" holding a doggone Ruger, talking about your arm gonna fall off shooting people, that little man. All them little dudes, they all at the biggest damn
shit
guns
is nuts, man.
See.
It is not a game. Gucci Mane is doing something very good for the community by trying to get this shit to stop, because it is out of control.
Doesn't he have children?
Gucci? I don't know. Not that I know of. I've never heard anything about him. I know he got married a couple years ago. I've never heard anything about Gucci Mane having a child that I know of.
And I'm just wondering, because usually with marriage, children, you know, that kind of growth comes about. I'm not saying that's the only way you can grow, but I'm just curious as to what's making him grow. And also, he's getting older, I'm sure, and mortality's setting in.
A ton of therapy, and also...
Well, Gucci went to prison for a couple years, and when he came out, he was a different dude.
Totally a different dude.
And Keisha Keor, she held him down while he was in prison and was invested in his money for him, so he came out a family man, therapy, wrote a wonderful, wonderful autobiography.
Ooh, really?
Who is it he's friends with? Is it Malcolm Gladwell that he got close to and read a lot of his stuff? And
I can believe
they
that.
They became friends. I think it's Gladwell.
Excellent. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
He lost weight, got his teeth fixed, everything.
Gucci Mane got five kids, y'all.
Okay.
That's what's up, including a 4-month-old son from 2021.
Yeah, which is why when he did what he did with Jeezy, that was so huge. Because, he told Jeezy, go dig your partner up. I bet you he can't say shit. It was like, God damn.
He even performed that song in front of Jeezy during their verses.
During their verses, that's right.
But then they buried the hatchet after that. But that was,
Let's flip it up real quick, Rod. That Gucci Mane's a good one, man. Gucci turned over a new leaf really is unprecedented shit that you would even see happen.
On the other end, for your white coworkers, for the last 9 months, there has been a war raging in India between dogs and monkeys. And I mean, a real fucking war is going on.
So monkeys versus dogs in India.
Yeah, it started in November 2021, some dogs killed a baby monkey. And since then, the monkeys...
Then the dog told the monkey, go dig your partner up. I bet you he can't say shit.
That's wrong. So wrong.
But after that happened, since then, the monkeys have been coming into town and killing every dog they see. The death toll is now over 300 dogs have been murdered, including in one village. They have eradicated all the dogs in the village.
Fuck.
The monkeys come into town, snatch puppies, drag them to the top of buildings, and throw them off. They have been murking dogs since December here.
And this is all over the death
all
of
over
that
death
one,
one
baby.
Baby. They kill one monkey, and now they're trying to make dogs extinct.
This is a fucking John Wick level.
Not fucking round.
You kill my...
Yo, what's crazy, Rod, I'm holding you. I'm trying to back you up here, homie. I see a story in the Post. It's two monkeys that killed 250 fucking
they
dogs.
They are tearing these
two
dogs
monkeys.
Apart, though. It has been
two
happening
monkeys.
For almost a year now. They killed that baby monkey in November, and since then, these monkeys are trying to do everything they can to wipe dogs off the face of the earth.
Like, the local cops arrested the monkeys.
Crazy.
They're going crazy.
Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell.
That was true. I felt that.
Wow.
Literally, they're just, let's kill all the dogs. This is the only way to make this right.
They out for blood, man. They out for fucking blood.
Oh my God, the video on this shit is ridiculous. I'm not even going to send it. It is bad. Ooh, this is bad.
And I will say this.
Ooh.
If there's one way to cut down on white gentrification of your country, it is to just be chilling at a coffee shop. And then a dog just flies down through the umbrella and lands in your fucking scone or whatever the fuck your Americanized treat is in this country.
On top of the building.
With sunglasses on.
Standing in front of a mission accomplished
pets
banner.
Are out of the question. Jacqueline would not laugh.
I don't find it funny at all.
I know you don't. I'm simply trying to use this issue to solve another issue. That's all I'm saying is that.
Release monkeys into the neighborhood to get rid of gentrification.
What if they captured five of these monkeys and then just put them in a different city? Like on like a SEAL team type fucking mission.
If you discover it, we can't acknowledge your existence.
No.
Like the
no,
original
no.
Rednecks?
The target is a dog park near Mexico City. We need to get these white folks from stop doing yoga in the dog park.
No. It's just a monkeys dressed no. up like banditos. It's like the Magnificent Seven. These monkeys come in on fucking on mini horseback. And they just laying dogs the fuck down.
No questions, no words. Just come in and just start taking dogs out from out of nowhere.
It's not fucking funny, but goddamn, don't fuck with monkeys.
Don't fuck with them. They got opposable thumbs, man. They not here for the bullshit.
I'm mad you've shown me this story because now this is all I'm going to be looking at for the rest of the fucking week. This is crazy.
Like, this shit is straight up big. It started in November. It is still going on today.
I wouldn't tell you to look up the video, JG, because I know how you are. But, man, like,
I'm not looking
yo,
at
it looks like it's wire work. It literally looks like wire work. Like, it looks like the monkeys are some out of some kind of movie. Like, they are, like, this is crazy. Yeah, you got me on this one, homie. Wow.
I don't know what to do. I'm not looking at that video. I don't know who sent it to me. I'm not.
It's about hurt people. You're in pain, so you're trying to pass that pain on and then going to the studio and making a track and telling everybody how you nigga, I threw your partner off the roof. That bitch ass motherfucker ain't say nothing but I'm sorry, John.
I'm so sad.
I'm for real. That's wrong. Stop laughing, third. That was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. His podcast. This Uncle Rod
that is
story.
Sad,
corner.
Rod. I don't like it.
His podcast.
Don't wave your hands at me.
I don't make the news. I just report it.
Oh.
That is
you
sad.
Listen to this podcast wherever you download our podcast. Rod, as always, we thank you, brother. And I leave you to the rest of your
bless
thank you, Rod.
I'm sorry, Jack. I shouldn't have done that.
That was... Where's your Rocky, Raggy?
Scam of the week time.
So terrible.
Scam of the week
time. So terrible.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry, dog owners. I know they're mad at us right now.
Not
we've
us.
Gone. We've gone like 70, almost 80 episodes. We've never, you know, this isn't who we know.
I just got a dog. I don't know if I feel bad at all, but I just.
Scam of the week time. Got a two-timer up in here, third. Now, the two-time club is the illustrious part of the job fair, where we welcome people that have been on this show more than once. This is a vaulted, exalted club to be a part
true.
Of.
True.
Got Bomani Jones, two-time carry champion. Pastor Crosswhite has been on the show two times. And, of course, our favorite two-timer, not racist Susan.
Susan.
From Huntsville.
What up, girl?
Listening, Susan. Not racist Susan. We want you to know that we love you. This brother came on the show before and talked to us a great deal about the idea of being fished by a potential employer, only to reveal that it's a hacker trying to get your information. His podcast is What the Heck with Adam Levin. Adam Levin, welcome back to the job fair. Now, Adam, last time we didn't get a chance to talk about this, but I had a friend who was working remote.
Yes, sir.
And she was caught by her company's IT department working out of the country.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a big to-do because she was in Paris and she had set up a background in her little villa in Paris to make it look like she was still in America and was just doing her job.
I like her style.
Yes.
Because there's no job requirement that you have to be in America to do the job, but some of the other employees were getting funky, but it was fucking with morale. Mm. So when they found out, they told her, all right, look, we know you're in Paris, but you can't tell any of the other employees because it's going to fuck up the company. So continue to fake being in America. To which I said, couldn't you just get a VPN and work? And I'm talking now specifically about the scam that is starting to happen of people taking on two remote jobs full time with one employer, not knowing what the other employer is doing.
Right.
Can a VPN protect you and let you double dip in two different companies? Because, you know, a lot of people are taking on two remote jobs and then outsourcing the job that they really don't like and still pinching, basically splitting the salary with another motherfucker overseas, which to me is ingenious. I think it's all in the game. I think the shit is fair.
Yes.
Does a VPN help protect you from the IT guy who was snooping all up in your fucking hard drive, seeing what your IP address to see physically where you are in America?
Nosy motherfucker.
No, no question. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network, and it's an encrypted, think of it as an encrypted tube that connects your device to wherever it is you're trying to get
to. It's like a privacy screen. You don't need to know where I'm at, motherfucker. Let me put down my VPN.
And there are VPN. The only issue, of course, with VPNs, use the ones that you pay for, because the ones that are free, you're the product. They're collecting your data. Now, you know, a lot of them say, you know, and especially if they're operating overseas, there's also now the whole issue with the GDPR, which is the General Data Privacy Regulation.
Maybe Jacqueline's China question was valid.
Right, I had to come back to China.
Talked about China.
Right. Well, and that's why we say to people, if you go to places like, you know, reported, go to Russia or China, whatever, use a burner phone and get a device specially for that, because they hack you from the second you get anywhere near them. So you got to do that. But this is part of actually one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about. When we did the book Swiped, and you're operating in a world where breaches have become the third certainty in life. So you're going to get hit. And the reality is the only reason why they may not have hit you so far is because they had so many people to choose from. They took them a while to get around to you. So, or it could be you clicked on the wrong link or opened the wrong attachment. But so we created a framework that would make people sort of feel more comfortable, make it more accessible in terms of how you protect yourself. and it's called the 3 M's. How do you minimize your risk of exposure, reduce your attackable surface? Not easy in a world where there are 35 billion Internet of Things devices, from your coffee pot to your refrigerator to your security cameras to your computer to the HVAC system in your home. I mean, everything is a smart device, except they've been made dumb. The way they've been made dumb is they all come with a manufacturer default password, and all of them are for sale on the dark web. So, you know, rule number one, change the password when you get any device that connects into the internet. So the first M, minimize your risk of exposure. The second M, monitor. How do you monitor so you know you have a problem as fast as possible? And the third M is, how do you manage the damage? So it's minimize, monitor, manage. And there are there are same for businesses as for consumers, maybe a little different twist, but as a consumer, first thing is password protocol. Do not use a dumb password like password or 123456 or 987654. Don't do that. Also, even if you have a really good password, don't share it across your universe of passwords.
I be forgetting them passwords. Me too. I ain't got time to remember 47 different passwords.
I got an answer for you. Get a password manager. They're good. There are a number of them that are very good, and they're so highly encrypted that if the password manager, the company, gets breached, they're so well encrypted, nobody can do anything with them anyway. Password manager will create, it will store your own passwords, but if you say to yourself, I'm never going to come up with RS$1FZ, whatever, then, you know, get a password manager. It can create passwords for you, and they're multi-platform. If you get the ones you pay for, that means it will be good for your phone, it'll be good for your computer, it'll be good for your iPad. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Apple people, man. My Google, the Google joint has that. In fact, when I got the Pixel, that was the first thing that kind of flipped me out, is that it started going through and changing my shit for me and being like, you got too many of the same password. Apparently, you can't use draws 21 for everything
that you do. Especially since there are about 600 other people in the world. Maybe 600,000 other people in the world that may use that one too. So
6,000, you know. That many people is using use draws as a password. It was an eye opener, sir. I agree. I didn't think that many people would be into it.
So you know, get a password manager. Second thing is use what they call two-factor authentication, and that's where you start to log onto a website. And then something pops up and says, press this and we'll send a code to your trusted device, whether it's your phone, your email. The only problem is if the code they send is sent to your email and your email gets compromised, well, the bad guys get the code. Yeah. There's also a thing called SIM swapping, where they pay off somebody at the phone company to tell them, you know, what your password is. Or they get them to transfer your phone number, unbeknownst to you, to the bad guys. So when the code comes in, it comes to the bad guy. It can happen. That's why a lot of people do a thing now where they with their mobile provider, they have a PIN number to their account. But then don't create 1234 or 1111 or 000. Or a lot of people use their anniversary date, their birth date, their kids' birthdays. And again, so many people are on social media telling everybody everything about themselves. And, you know, hackers and scammers, they follow people on social media. So that's it. Two-factor authentication. Don't click on links or open attachments. A lot of people, they get stuff from people. They think it's from their boss. They think it's from their good buddy. I would say to people, if you get something from somebody, I know it's a buzzkill, pick up the phone and say, did you really send me this? And even then, they might have gotten something that wasn't good. They didn't realize there was malware on it, but they sent it to you as, look at this cat picture. Well, the cat picture had malicious code on it. So you have to be careful with that. Don't download every app that's the newest, coolest app in the world. Go to the App Store on Apple. Mm-hmm. Go to Google Play, although Google Play's had some incidents recently. So you got to be careful. Read reviews. If somebody's had a problem, they're going to get real loud. Read the reviews. Freeze your credit. Simple. You go to the three credit reporting agencies. There's a process. Not that hard. Takes a little time. And that means once your credit is frozen, no one, including you, can get into your credit without a special PIN number. And you can thaw it if you're getting a loan for something and then freeze it. But it's very important. And you can do it for your kids, too, which is really important. You can do it. And it's free now. Free. So.
Well, good, man. Well, the book is Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Fishers, and Identity Thieves. The podcast is What the Heck with Adam Levin. Adam, thank you for coming back on the show. Thank you for confirming that I can get a VPN and hide from my fucking hating ass supervisor just because I want to work in France and don't want to be it. As always, sir, thank you so much for coming on the Job Fair.
Thank you so much.
Call us for the IPO.
Let me know when you need my kids. Either way, I got you, bro. Good stuff.
Absolutely.
After the break. Word up.
After the break, we're getting into the world of employment. It's the Job Fair. We'll be right back.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, JG, what are your reality shows of choice?
When Real World came out, I really enjoyed that. That's aging me, but I really enjoyed that. And I learned a lot from the black guy who was on there, the first one, because you never really saw him. He used all that time in New York to go and do other things. He went on business calls. I thought that was brilliant. And they even pulled him to the side one time and they said, "Why aren't you ever here?" And he just kind of looked around. But then when they did like a reunion special or whatever, he even told them, "Man, I had so many different business calls to take care of. So I don't really watch reality, sir."
And that was pre-Zoom. You actually had to meet a motherfucker. You had to like, go to the fucking... reality TV, you know, there are parts of it that are true. There are parts of it that are a little bit fabricated isn't the word. I just say you have to cheat it for television, you know. Like people try to say, "Oh, I've been in reality TV." No, I was in competition television. And to me, there's a difference. Neither world is scripted. But Last Comic Standing ain't The Bachelorette. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not the same world.
And Heart of the City is not The Circle. You know what I'm saying? The Circle. You know what I'm saying? Like, I watched those reality shows, man, because my wife was definitely into them joints, and I can't argue in the bedroom. If she wants to watch, we're watching it.
And I think where today's reality stars have figured out the sweet spot, and this is where we fucked up as comedians on Last Comic Standing. We were so locked in on winning that we forgot to be memorable. And to me, that's really what it's all about. It's about figuring out a way to do things that resonate with the viewer, because if you do that, please believe the producers are going to find other ways to keep flipping and working with you and growing with you. Just ask Tiffany Pollard. Just ask Flavor Flav and what was it? Brigitte Nielsen.
It was a long list.
I love New York. New York didn't win Flavor of Love, but she won.
She's got a show.
See what I'm saying? So, who do we have on the line, JG? I'm excited to talk to this woman and have her break down a little bit of this world of reality TV. It's always good when we have an international guest.
Absolutely international. We have model and reality television personality, Chloe Veach. She's best known for her appearance in Too Hot to Handle and The Circle. Veach has also appeared in the Celebrity Ghost Trip, where she was partnered with Too Hot to Handle co-star Nicole and Celebrity Hunted 2022. So that proves your point exactly, because they brought her right back around, Roy.
Yep. the podcast is banging with Chloe Veach. Chloe,
yeah.
Welcome to the Job Fair. Thank you for joining us from across the pond. Let's just off the jump, let's just get into the podcast. How do you get people to talk about all they sex shit with you? Like, what is the secret to creating that warmth? Why are you wanting me? I'm asking her secrets as an interviewer.
Oh, okay. Do you know what? I think when you're vulnerable as an interviewer and you kind of let some stories slip on your end, you automatically make the guest feel comfortable and vulnerable and willing to open up about their sex lives as well. And I obviously always tell them, like, if you don't feel comfortable, raise your hand. But if not, we're definitely putting it in with me.
Nice.
Like, when you first go out for these types of shows, like The Circle, I would imagine, what was the audition or submission process? Is it just you sent them a couple of your Instagram clips? Did they look through your social media to see what type of partier you were? Or was it kind of a formal sit-down type thing? Because I'm from an era 20 years ago where you would literally go to some hotel conference room, wait in line with a bunch of motherfucking strangers for 8 hours, and then you would have 90 seconds to impress a stranger, and then either you got a phone call or you didn't.
So basically, what happened was I used to work in a fish and chip shop. So I used to sell chips and French fries for a living, right? I got into modeling, and then what happened was I'd done a little modeling job and I met someone who was a casting producer. So she rang me and she was like, Chloe, I've got this show for you. Do you want to come on it? I said, well, what is it? She said, I can't tell you what it is. Just
wow, classic.
I thought, this is going to be shit. I don't want to go on it, right? She's not selling it to me. Anyway, it got to the interview questions. I was being asked all the raunchiest stuff, right? Like, have you ever had a threesome? Have you ever had sex with your best friend's partner?
Damn.
Have you ever... And I just thought, what type of show is this? What am I getting myself into? And then obviously I found out later on down the line it was Taught to Handle and it was to be on Netflix. But obviously I weren't made aware of that. I just thought it was a really sketchy process to begin with.
How much of you is your true self on camera versus off camera in these types of scenarios?
I mean, to be honest with you, Taught to Handle, I was so naive. I was like 19 years old and I had no clue about TV or nothing. So I was just like winging it. But on The Circle, I kind of knew how the game was played sort of thing. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to make some really good airtime on this show. I've got the opportunity. I've got one up in the others because I've already been on TV before. I didn't win, fuming. But behind the scenes on The Circle for me, I was so exhausted from being isolated for so long. I had to isolate for 3 weeks before joining the show. And then I had to isolate on the show because it's an isolation show, right? Whenever I got really tired and said, I sound like such a diva, I promise I'm not. I said to one of the producers, I'm really, really tired. Like, I need to go to sleep. I would sleep 4 or 5 hours during the day. And then I would just be woke up by the producer and they'd go, right, Chloe, showtime. And then I'd just start. I'd be like 100 miles an hour again. So like The Circle was different to Taught to Handle. Taught to Handle, the cameras were on us all the time. Like, I couldn't shit.
That's not good. No cameras in the bathroom.
You have a particular stance as it relates to stigmas and stereotypes. Will you share some of that with us, please?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've always, like, since being in this industry, like, I want to talk about stuff that I'm passionate about on my Instagram. And, like, there's a stigma around the word influencer, and I hate it. And, like, when people come up to me in the street and they're like, oh, my God, you're that famous person. I'm like, am I famous, though? Like, I've been on a couple of TV shows, but am I really famous? And, like, the stigma around being an influencer, because obviously the TV is where you get the exposure. And then off the back of the TV, that's where you get the brand collaborations with like small businesses or big businesses that you genuinely love yourself. So like, I love Fashion Nova, so I work with them. And so many people just give me stick around being an influencer and being fake and pretend. And I was having a conversation with someone on the train yesterday, and he said to me, like, being an influencer, you could be anyone. Like, a sales guy is an influencer. If you influence someone in the right way that makes you feel comfortable, that you're passionate about doing it in the right way. So it's like my podcast banging as well. Like, that gives me fire in my belly knowing I've got that. Like, you guys will know, having your own podcast, because you can talk about shit you want to talk about. Like, you can be yourself.
When the networks ain't talking to you or the people ain't touching you, you just got to be Chloe. So what's the difference? Like, what have you seen as far as the progress of how all the reality shows have kind of progressed over the years?
To be honest with you, I feel like because influencers and certain people have either... Like, mental health is a big thing at the minute. It's massive. And now it's something, and it's a topic that people are now aware of, that we speak about constantly. I think that what I found is that with Netflix, progressing from Top Model to then Too Hot to then The Circle, the comfort and the support system that I got on the show, before the show, and when I come off the show, like, that's the only real difference that I've felt and seen being on different shows. Like, other than that, we're all kind of the same. Do you know what I mean? There's always the exec producer. There's always the director. There's always downtime. But, like, the things that I care about the most are the aftercare. Like, are we being looked after?
One thing you stopped consuming in the last year or so is alcohol. How much of the destruction of other reality contestants that you have seen in terms of people who do not handle the cameras and the lights well contributed to that decision?
That wasn't one of the reasons why I stopped drinking. I stopped drinking because the highs and the lows, when I film a show, I'm on a high. Off the back of the show coming out, I'm on a high. And then when I'm waiting for another show, I'm on a low. I'm depressed. Like, what am I doing with my life? I'm like, am I going to make it? Am I a failure? Does Netflix like me? Am I enough? And all those schoolgirls' insecurities start creeping in, and I pick up the bottle because I want to change the way I feel. And it got to the point where I got myself in such a bad state of depression that I just wanted to kill myself. And there's so many people in this industry that have done that, that have took their own lives because they can't cope with the pressure of wanting to keep everyone happy. But actually, like, what I need to do now is focus on what makes me happy. So I've stopped drinking completely. Yay! I'm drinking water.
I'm with you. There it is.
Congratulations, Chloe.
Thank you.
The podcast is banging, and I am going to give it a listen because I'm looking at the title of some of the episodes, and I know that I can't match. Like, I don't have sharing vibrators. Stories. Jacqueline.
She's
opened up on that one. Yeah, Jacqueline. So that's a real podcast. They talk about real shit over there.
So Jacqueline's gonna be a guest then, because we can't even begin to go down the road of vibrations and such.
Chloe,
I don't know nothing about vibrators, and I definitely don't know nothing about sharing them.
No.
You need to join the podcast, and I will strictly tell the producers what to talk about.
She's hilarious. Chloe Beach, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
That's what's up.
And we look forward to everything. That's the show. Royce Job Fair is a product of Comedy Central, Paramount, and South Park and Princeton Productions. Down South Georgia Girl here real quick. Third, I forgot about this one. Two Live Crew. With the Pretty Woman lawsuit. Campbell versus Acuff Rose Music Incorporated. I remember this because I flunked mass media law.
Say word.
And it's why I remember this case about parody.
I hate having shit like parody. That in common with you, bro.
Because
fuck people.
I don't
that was a hard
care.
Class. No, fuck people. That was a hard class. It took me two times to pass.
There's no pictures in law books, Jacqueline. You know that. Can't deal with no pictures.
Whatever.
No fucking
it's the
pictures.
Only course you take in time with
you
no
didn't
pictures.
Go to that class. That's what was going on. But go
that's
ahead.
Disrespectful.
I didn't go the first time. The third time I tried, and I was like, ooh, shit. I see why I stopped going the first two times.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.